has money and the life will never show you no pity. Oh, I work hard trying to make my bones, but times have changed and I just got to move. Can't run away, can't run away, can't run. I can't run away, can't run away from the things that I.
Good evening and welcome to the Frank Collada Show, Frank's World, where Frank's guests will include former mobsters and lawmen, businessmen and women, and entertainers. You can participate in tonight's show by calling in with your question or comment at 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. The show is brought to you by MobCon 2014. Which will be held on September 27th and 28th at Palace Station Hotel and Casino in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. As author and screenwriter Nick Pileggi said, MobCon is the real deal. For information or to register for the conference, visit www.mob-con.net. Tonight, Frank is going to talk about MobCon and what the attendees there can expect to hear with retired FBI agent Dennis Arnoldy and yours truly, author and mob historian Denny Griffin. Now, without further ado, here's the man himself, Mr. Frank Collada.
Hello, welcome everybody to my world. I wish you were.
You can listen to the show. You can hit me on it.
Anyway, I have, as my guest tonight, it's going to be Dennis Arnoldy.
Hey, and he will, I just said something about Dennis Arnoldy.
And he will be on shortly. Right now, I want to tell you a little bit about MobCon. As you know, this year we're going to have a...
It's Frank talking on there.
Going to be female speakers, and that which we never had before, and they're going to be girls that were affiliated with the mob one way or another. And we're going to have FBI, former FBI agents, a couple strike force attorneys, and a retired federal judge. And it's going to be very interesting, this MobCon, so I suggest that you get off your butt and go buy some tickets. We're almost sold out. I'd like to sell out. So without any further ado, let me introduce Mr. Arnoldy. Dennis Arnoldy, are you there?
Dennis, you need a call.
I think we might have him coming on right now.
Okay.
Dennis, is that you?
That's me, Denny. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you? And welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Denny, why don't you start asking a few questions, and then I'll pop in every once in a while, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Dennis, what we were talking, of course, about MobCon coming up in just a couple of weeks. And tonight, we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the presenters, some of the speakers who are going to be there. And you're going to be one of the key speakers. And I just introduced you as a retired FBI agent, but would you like to tell the audience a little bit about how you got to know Frank?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I was an FBI agent for 27 years. And my first 10 years were spent in El Paso, Texas, and Little Rock, Arkansas. And in 1980, I was transferred to the Las Vegas division of the FBI. And as soon as I got here, I was assigned to the Organized Crime Squad, which at that time was heavily involved in the investigation of organized crime in Las Vegas, Nevada. Mainly it was the Chicago outfit, of which Frank was a part, but we also were investigating Kansas City and Chicago and Los Angeles, you name it. All of them seemed to have some connection with Las Vegas. I, of course, was assigned to a case that was already being investigated, and took over control of that case shortly after around December of 1980. And my part of the case was concentrating particularly on Anthony Tony Spilotro and his street gangs, more or less, his crews. His main crew, of course, was run by Frank Collada, who was the number one lieutenant to Mr. Spilotro. And as such, he was quite a target of ours, and one that I concentrated on quite a bit. And after subsequent investigation, we were able to know that Frank and his crew were going to do a burglary at Bertha's on July 4th, 1980, because we had some inside information. And we were able to arrest all the participants at the burglary, one of the participants being Frank. Subsequent to the arrest, a few months later, Frank decided to become a government witness after the FBI advised him that there had been a hit put on him. And after that time, Frank became a government witness, a very good government witness, and it was my responsibility to handle that part of the investigation. Frank and I spent a lot of time together. We traveled different places in the states, and we developed a rapport, which led to his testimony, a very good testimony that resulted in several convictions, including well, we never got the convictions of Mr. Spilotro because he was murdered in Chicago prior to the retrial. But Frank's contribution was huge to our investigation. Since that time, which was 1986 when we got the convictions, Frank and I have maintained contact to each other and see each other regularly and talk quite frequently, and I would consider him a friend.
Dennis.
Yes, I can barely hear you.
Oh, well, I'm yelling.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I'm glad you said a government witness and not an informant. Most people don't quite understand the difference between the two. An informant, I wish you could explain this to the listeners right now. Explain the difference between an informant and a government witness.
Well, generally, an informant would be considered someone who is given, and this is my definition, giving information to us that is valuable information about criminal activity that is going on at that time. Very likely and usually they're a member of the criminal activity. They're participating in it or closely aligned to the criminal activity, and they can give us information. And they're maintained very, very confidentiality. When Frank talks of a government witness, this is an individual, for whatever reason, became a witness for the government. Frank never supplied us information until he agreed to cooperate. So he wasn't, you might say the informant was, and this is a broad definition, acting under a like a confidential source. Well, Frank was, he made the deal with us, and then he gave us the information. At no time prior to making the deal did he ever furnish the government any information. And he became a very good witness, just like any citizen, and in several different court venues.
Well, let me ask you something, Denny.
Yeah.
Dennis, an informant, what benefit do they receive? And I mean, what's their goal in being an informant? I always consider that, I mean, from your standpoint, you know, it's a good deal. But from my standpoint, an informant was, I always felt as though he was the guy that had mixed emotions about what role he wanted to play in life. In other words, be a cop or an informant. He was walking a borderline, you know, between being a police officer and a crook, which I don't appreciate, you know, and I don't want you to agree with that, which I know you won't. But what kind of satisfaction do they receive? I mean, unless you got them and you tell them, listen, you want to put a wire on and do this and that for a moment, and we'll press the charges against you. Is this one way the Metro or the government works with these informants, or do they just volunteer and come up and say, Well, I like to set up Frank Collada this week for no particular reason. I know they don't want to be good citizens, but could you explain that to the listeners?
Well, I can't explain all the motivations for informants, but generally we would like, in my past, now we're going to talk about my experience, would like to get something, shall we say, get something on an informant where he push him into, not push him into a corner, but make it much easier for him, his future, if he would cooperate. Usually we've got them in some sort of criminal bind, criminal violation bind, and they can see that it would be easier, the future would be easier if they furnish information now, and perhaps they could go before a judge or go before the U.S. attorney and say, I was wrong, but I did cooperate, and hopefully they would get a lesser sentence or a lesser fine or whatever. That would be the motivation I would think most of them would have. Certainly, in my experience, that was what the way it was.
All right. Well, that makes a little sense to you. You know, it makes sense to me because there are times that I get in, when I'm doing these speaking events, you know, where I'm challenged on some of these questions, and I try to answer them to the best of my ability, which you made it a little easier for me to do now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first met you, I had just rolled at that time. And I believe that I was being interviewed before you stepped on as an interviewer by Charlie Parson, which his function in Vegas was, I always look at it as he was the second man in charge. You have another name for that. What was the name for
Charlie Parsons was the organized crime supervisor. He would not have been second in the chain of command. There would have been an SAC and an assistant special agent in charge, and then the supervisor. But the organized crime squad at that time was a large squad and a heavily worked squad. We're doing a lot of work. It was not just on you and not just on the Chicago outfit, but as you know, Gare Magnuson and Casper, they were all involved, and Lynn Farron, all had different parts of the organized crime investigation. We were quite busy, and Charlie was our supervisor.
You had a small office there. How many agents did you have at that time, would you say?
I couldn't even guess. I'm not even sure how many we...
Ben, I was under the impression that Vegas had a small office.
It was a small office, and we frequently had to have assistance from other. I'm guessing my squad was about 15, but that's just a wild guess because I was involved mainly with four or five of the guys, you know, and the others could have been were doing other things. It was busy. It was busy all the time. That night at Bertha's, we had practically the whole office plus Metro involved.
You had guys from out of state from too, when I understand,
yeah.
Arizona and stuff like that.
Indeed, you're right. Two Don Sickles and Bill Christensen from Arizona.
Yeah. But that was like the biggest bust that brought everything down. I'm not bragging when I say that, but it's actually what the
And you were involved.
Yeah.
And Charlie did talk to you first. There was a circumstance where I couldn't make it that first night. The second night from thereafter, I took over all your in contacts with you.
I think I talked to him two or three times before you stepped into the picture. And,
well, you talked to him at jail one time, I know for sure, maybe twice, I don't know.
And then I talked to him in a vehicle one time outside of jail.
Okay.
I don't know what kind of vehicle we were in. And he kept on pressing me about murders. And
mm-hmm.
I was very hesitant on talking about it, but then he assured me that as long as I wasn't read my rights, that I wouldn't be charged with these murders until, you know. But once I was read my rights and got immunity, then it was a different story. And then you stepped on board.
That's correct.
Right after that. As soon as I said the first murder, he sort of walked out of the room, and I said, "What the hell's going on here?" I thought to myself. You got to remember, Dennis, I didn't trust of course, I didn't trust the FBI, Metro, nobody. And at that particular time, I was, like, very vulnerable to, I had everybody against me, the outfit, I thought the FBI, Metro, so I was a man alone. I was like a man without a country. And then when you start, and I didn't really like Charlie that much, although he was a likable guy, but then after I got to talking to you, we formed a trust with each other. You never lied to me, and that was very important because I was very weak at the time. You know, I had nowhere to go. I was all alone in the world, you know, so to say, or so to speak. And what was your first opinion of me? Now, I mean, be truthful. Would you say, this jerk, or, you know, I mean, what was your first opinion of me when you first met me? Or after the first meeting with me, let's put it like that.
Well, I thought you just what you said about yourself, that you were wary of us and wary of law enforcement in general. I didn't have any opinion that you were a good guy or a bad guy at that point. I knew you were a bad guy. You were not our guy, but I knew that you were someone that was going to tell me the truth. I had no problem. I didn't come out and say bad things about you or anything like that. To me, you were just a person that we needed to speak to and develop information from.
More or less, that was just a job. It was your job. You're doing your job.
You could say that.
I understood that as time went on. Of course, I always knew in my mind that any law enforcement that we used to go up against, us organized crime guys, that you had a job just like we had a job. Ours wasn't legit, and yours was legit. So it was like a ball game to me, you know. And
exactly.
I never, you know, you just had a bigger, you had more money on your team, you know.
That's right.
And more
guys. We always figured we'd win that game.
You always figured you'd win. Well, you did.
Yeah,
you
we did.
No hard feelings. You know, I mean, I didn't have any hard feelings. But
you and I get along well, but you've met several other agents from that time, and none of them has said, I've treated just like you're anybody else, right?
Yeah, right. But there, you know, I will tell you, I'm not going to mention any names. Of course, there's not going to be speakers in there, you know, at our forum over there at MapCon.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a few, I'm not talking about maybe Metro. I'm not talking about the FBI or Strike Force or any of that house, but there was a few guys that there was no love lost. You know, I didn't. I really never did trust them, and
I know of whom you speak.
You know, and that's my feelings. I really one way I won't mention their names, but one way or another, I wouldn't care if they knew. You know, how I felt. I mean. It was no feather in their cap. If they think for 1 minute it was a feather in their cap that I rolled, they have another guest coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand.
That's how I feel. I haven't won the game by stroking anybody at this point in my life, you know?
Gotcha, yeah.
You know, that's my feeling. I hope the people understand what I'm saying. And they're going to hear a lot more from you and I at MobCon when we're there. I don't want to say too much more. You know, I mean, we got a little bit more time here. So I'd like Denny to jump in on this, you know. You got a sore throat, Denny?
Yeah, well, no, I'm all set. I've just been enjoying the conversation. What I want to do is real quick run down the list of presenters we're going to have. I can't get to all of them, but I'll get to most. And then Frank, you and Dennis can comment on who these people are or what you think. And the a new addition this year is going to be Mr. John L. Smith. Now, anybody that's familiar with Las Vegas and has ever read the Las Vegas Review-Journal newspaper would be familiar with John. He's a columnist, an award-winning columnist for the paper. And he's also written several books. And he's going to be one of the speakers this year on Saturday.
That's a good thing. I've known John for 20 years or more, and he has a good handle on what's going on in Las Vegas. I think he'll be a very entertaining speaker, and he speaks very well.
He's really up on past organized crime and stuff. You know, he's really a good historian when it comes to talking about organized crime and who was involved in it. Because I've heard him talk a few times, and I know he knows what he's talking about when he says things. So I'm glad he's going to be there also. And John, I have to tell you a little story about John L. Smith. I was out of the program, and it was, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago or something. And I get a call from Dennis Arnoldy over here, and he says, "Oh, you're alive." And I go, "Why, am I supposed to be dead?" And he says, "Yo, according to the newspaper, you were found dead." And I says, "What do you mean? Who wrote that article?" And he says, "John Smith." And I says, "What?" He says, "Well, do you want to remain dead or do you want to be alive? He says, tell me what you want to do." This is you telling me, Arnoldy. Dennis. So I said, I'll call him. I want to call him and tell him. I'll shock him. You know, so you laughed, I laughed. I got a few more calls after that from family, and they want to, you know, they were happy to hear I was alive. I guess my enemies weren't. So I did contact John, and he answered the phone. Fortunately, he answered the phone, and he heard my voice. You know, this guy knew my voice right off the bat. And he said, "Oh, my God." I said, "Well, John," I says, "they removed the stake out of my chest, and I'm back here live." And he says, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And he couldn't stop apologizing. He says, "My source of information was absolutely positive that you were found dead in your place." And he says, "I am so sorry. I will write a retraction," which he done. But previous to this, John Smith didn't really like criminals. So he wrote about them, you know. But now I get along with John. John is a real nice guy. That's all I got to say about John.
Okay.
Yeah.
The one of the presentations, in fact, that Dennis and Frank are both going to be involved in is called Turning Points. And that's going to be, they will discuss the three things in Dennis Arnoldy's opinion that turned the tide in the FBI's favor in their battle with the Chicago outfit in Vegas. I don't want to give away what those three items are, or three incidents are, but that's going to be one of the presentations. And then another thing that involves both of you is going to be the presentation on Sunday called Murder in McHenry. It involves you not as speakers, but you were involved in the incident. And we're going to have the author or the co-authors of a book called Murder in McHenry, and it's about the 1981 double homicide in Lakemore, Illinois. It's about 40 miles out of Chicago. It was called the Scharf and Freeman murders. It was Ron Scharf was killed, and his son Paul is one of the authors of this book, and it happened, ironically, that case was cold. It was a cold case by the Lakemore, I guess it's a county agency, Lakemore Police Department. And they, Paul's former babysitter read Frank's first book titled Colada. And she read on page 130 of that book a description of the Scharf Freeman murders, in which the killer was named, Frank named the killer. And I didn't realize at the time, because I knew the killer was doing life without parole for murder. I thought that's why he was in. It turned out he was in on a different murder. And this case ended up being cleared after all this time as a result of that. Do you have any comment to make, either or both of you, about the Freeman, Scharf Freeman murders?
Well, all I could say is that when I received immunity, I told the FBI in the statements that I made that who killed this, where this murder was taking place and who done it, you know, and so on. And, of course, being that they're an investigative organization, they reached out to McHenry. And then soon after that, I was locked up in a witness unit at that time. I believe a police chief came down. I don't know. Dennis, you might know. And then one of their attorneys came down. And I talked to these people. And I certainly remember, correct me, Denny, if I'm wrong, I don't remember them taking notes on that. Well, I try to explain to the people what you seen when you were there in that meeting, weren't you?
Well, I certainly spoke with the state attorney or whatever they call them back there. I, as far as note taking, I don't recall one or the other, but I do know that you and I furnished the information that you had furnished the bureau here in Las Vegas. And it was good information, I do know that. And I do know that we furnished it. Whether they wrote anything down or not, I don't know. But it's a very interesting case, Denny, and something that I think anybody would be interested in hearing about.
I hope you and Frank are both in the room, if possible, when this presentation is going on, because it would be very interesting, because Paul Scharf, the son of the murder victim, is... can't thank you guys enough for what you did to help bring some, I hate to call it closure, his father is still dead, nothing's going to change that, but to bring at least some resolution to the case by knowing, identifying who the killer was. Another very interesting, I think it's going to be an extremely interesting panel, it's also Sunday, it's called Prosecuting the Mob. And we're going to have retired federal judge and former Strike Force attorney Larry Levitt and former Strike Force attorney Stan Hunterton. And I'm really looking forward to that panel. Do either one of you fellas want to comment on those two speakers?
Well, let me give a real brief on that, and then Dennis can take over.
Okay.
I highly respected both of these individuals that you just mentioned. They were... really, really smart men, and they were very honest with me, and they made my me testifying. It made me comfortable with them around, and at this time in life, I'm friendly with them. I could probably go by their houses for dinner if I wanted, you know. But I have a lot of good things to say about them. But Denny. You know more, Dennis, about their personal lives or whatever. So would you like to elaborate on that?
Well, both Stan Hunterton and Larry Levitt were in the strike force here while we were investigating the Chicago outfit and organized crime. And without a doubt, I'd say they're the two best attorneys that I ever dealt with. Both were very prosecution-oriented. And certainly hardworking, and they knew exactly what needed to be done. And the most important thing, they let the FBI and Metro do what we thought had to be done. They never interfered with our investigations. And they both did very well. And Larry later became a magistrate judge here for many, many years in the federal system. But both of them had great experience. Stan Hunterton also was back in Washington, D.C. and worked back there. And both of them are excellent speakers and very humorous, actually. Larry Levitt is a great speaker. You and I were with him a couple years ago, Frank, and I thought he did a great job. And I think these are two people who've got the experience, the knowledge, and the background that will tie everything together as far as investigations and prosecutions. They're really at top of the list.
Gentlemen, we're going to have to let it go right there. We're out of time, and
okay.
We'll continue this, of course, at MobCon. Dennis, thanks so much for being on the show with us tonight, and I look forward to seeing you on September 27th.
Happy to do it, and I'm looking forward to MobCon, and I would recommend it to anybody who's listening.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you guys.
Good night, Dennis.
Good night.
And thanks. Don't forget to check out the MAPCON site at www.mapcon.net. Thanks and good night.
Good night.